Hello, Ivan.
Hello.
Thanks for being able to start early.
What are you doing up so early?
Getting ready for more moving.
Oh, that's right. I forgot about the move. Yes. Okay. All right. Ooh. Oh, your muscles.
a little sore.
A little? Just a little? Oh, man. You haven't really done much yet. You know, just make sure you get a nice ample supply of a leave, like, standby at the end of the day, okay? Just make sure you take a couple before you go to bed, so the next morning you're not waking up like, oh my god, my hair hurts too. I'm like, oh, you know, so.
Cool.
All right, let's light this candle. Come on, let's do this.
Welcome to Curmudgeon's Corner for Sunday, September 11th, 2011. I'm Sam Minter. I've got Yvonne Bo with me. Hello, Yvonne.
Hello.
And, you know, as with last week's show, which I did, you know, actually yesterday,
so you didn't do it until yesterday?
I
thought you just posted it late.
I actually recorded it late Friday night.
Well, okay, all right. Okay.
And as with that show, I'm in the middle of a move. I'm actually sitting in a room in the new house. The computer's here now. The we have internet here now. House.
Okay, good.
By the way, Fios internet now 25/25, much better than what we had before.
I don't know, for some reason, maybe this plays something into it. But I was going to remark before, I didn't know you were at the new place, but you sound better on mine.
Well, there you go.
Okay, all right. I don't know if there's more. I mean, I don't know for whatever reason, but
well my ups my old internet was something like 25 down, 2 up.
Ouch.
Now it's 25/25.
Okay. Well, that's
so the uploading is like 10 times faster.
Okay.
More bandwidth. So,
all right.
You know, so it's pretty nice so far. Of course, so far also my computers, we don't have all the computers here yet. So there'll be more load on it later, but whatever.
Okay.
Anyway, but you know, so I'm a little chaotic here. We're doing it a couple hours earlier than we usually do, or an hour earlier than we usually do. But you know, we've got a bunch of stuff to talk about. First of all is obviously, as I started this show, I said it's September 11th, 2011. That's 10 years. After September 11th. Now, by the time you actually get this thing out, you know, everybody else will be done with their September 11th retrospective. So this will be your last, probably.
Yes.
But we figured we had to say something. We've also, we're going to talk a little bit about Yahoo and, you know, some of the stuff going on there. Obviously, President Obama also had a big job speech, and those Republicans were doing various things in relation to that as well. And Ivan, since he was in Europe last week, actually got himself in the middle of one of those protests out there. So he's going to talk about that. So let's get started. 9/11, 10 years.
Well, I mean, you know, somebody, I think one of the things I saw about this, somebody was asking, you know, put in one word, you know, how do you feel about this? Like, 10 years later, okay?
Hmm.
You know, what do you think encapsulated? To me, honestly, you know, there were like people that used fear, anger, optimism. But I mean, to me, it feels like, I mean, honestly, we've been in a sense of normalcy about this for a long time. That's how I feel.
The first word that actually came to my mind is sad. And not because... Yes, because of what actually happened at the time, but also because of what happened in the following 10 years.
I gotta agree. I mean, I think that, you know, I mean, I think we settled into normalcy about it, but yet at the same time, the actual post effects of this are, I mean, let's face it, they weren't good. I mean,
I've had a number of, you know, essays, and we've talked about this in the past too.
Mm-hmm,
like, to me, if you look back at the course of the last 10 years,
yeah,
the first thing that really comes to mind is Bin Laden got everything he wanted, except perhaps being alive.
Well, but, I don't know about that.
Let me explain.
Well, here's the one thing. Let me say, when you say that he got everything he wanted, okay, did he, you know, one of the things about sometimes when you ask for something, yes, maybe you got a certain package of things, but I think he probably got a whole bunch of
stuff he didn't want as well.
Exactly.
Yeah, certainly he probably wasn't counting on the strength of the U.S. reaction to sort of decimate his organization. However, you know, what were the things that he was pushing? He was pushing for, you know, us to, you know, get out of Saudi Arabia, and to a large extent, we removed our presence that was still there from the first Gulf War after this happened. He was looking to increase tensions between the West and the Arab world, you know, and sort of drive, you know, cause conflict there, you know, but just in general, regardless of what he wanted, let's see what actually happened here. I mean,
okay,
we had this massive counter reaction where, in order to make ourselves feel safer, we enabled all kinds of growth of the you know, what's the best way, the security state. You know, not only do we have the bullshit at airports, but we have massively increased federal power in terms of you know, what they can do without warrants, what they can track about people, what their, you know, just surveillance in general, tracking people, you know, arresting people without charges, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. We have all of this stuff, which, you know, at a certain era, I would hope, a lot of this stuff, I look at this and I'm like, this is practically anti-American, at least what America used to stand for in terms of the rule of law, due process, blah, 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 you know, privacy in your own home, unless there was, you know, specific reason to do otherwise. And then, of course, you know, we also had so many opportunities squandered. Right after the attacks, we had the whole freaking world being like, we're all Americans now, and being all positive about things. And, you know, and then we had, you know, W's approach was, you're with us or you're against us. And, you know, we don't need anybody. We're going to do this alone. And, you know, and just, you know, shoving everybody else out of the way. And then, you know, okay, we did Afghanistan. And almost everybody was fully on board with the initial stages of Afghanistan. And then suddenly it's like, we're going to go after Iraq because, you know, we think differently after 9/11 or something like that. And, you know, got into a big mess there. And, you know, again, it's sort of, you know, I think back over this time period and be like, is there any way... I don't know the answer to this, but, you know, is there any way that somebody else other than W could have gone into this situation and sort of reacted more calmly?
I think the answer is yes. And I think that it was like, let me tell you something. I was just reading an article about this and the reaction and talking about Darth Vader. I mean, Dick Cheney's yes. book, okay? And the fact that that motherfucker in the administration, honestly, he was more forceful than everybody else, but was more isolated about it. And to be honest, if anybody else would have been fucking vice president, for God's sakes, okay, a lot of this shit wouldn't have gone down the way it went down. Okay?
I mean, we've talked before, like, you know, if only in that sort of foreign policy battle that was happening in the early stages of administration, the person W had been listening to had been Colin Powell instead of Cheney.
Yes! You know? Could you imagine how... If Colin Powell, who could have been, by the way, had been the VP candidate instead of Cheney, okay? My God! I mean, are you serious? Could you imagine how different things would have been because of the diametrically opposed views? Even Donald Rumsfeld, now that you see his memoir after he was gone, was not as big a hawk as it was made to be. during that entire time period. Okay? I mean, the only guy in there that drove this, basically, and he even admits to it, single-minded pursuit in which he even admits that he couldn't give a crap about the Constitution, which, like, churned my stomach when I was just reading it, okay? How this asshole basically just couldn't give a shit about every principle that made our nation. He admits it, okay? And just basically was single-minded out to revenge and to fuck everybody and basically not give a shit about anything that actually are principles.
Yeah, and, you know, whoever was president at that time, you know, let's pretend it was Al Gore, you know? They would have been under enormous pressure to react and react strongly. I mean, you remember the environment after this happened. I mean, you know, people were, you know, we had to do something, you know? But, you know, it
And we did something. We went to Afghanistan, for God's sakes.
Yeah. And but the right president could have perhaps said, you know, like, you go in, you rout the Taliban, basically you say, you know, look, Afghanistan provided support for this operation through, you know, hiding bin Laden, blah, blah, blah. You go after Afghanistan, you rout the Taliban, and you put in your fake government there, and then you're like, okay, we're done. You know, and we'll continue to go after Al-Qaeda, you know, as a law enforcement matter, you know, or whatever, after that point. But that would have required a lot of leadership and somebody basically able to say, hey guys, you know, yes, this was bad, but we don't have to turn over our whole society and change how we think about everything in order to react to this.
Right.
You know, we can move forward calmly and coolly and handle this. You know, we're America, for God's sake. We don't need to let these people turn everything upside down.
Right. But unfortunately, we didn't. So
yeah, I mean, then you know, and there goes my alarm.
Oh, there you go. You have the same one I like.
Well, it depends. I use different alarms for different things.
But. Well, it's kind of funny. So we have our phones right, you know, over and over in Europe and need to put the alarm clock right. You know, so I go, my wife hears a ring. Oh, well, could you put, see, I'm setting up the alarm. And I was like, oh, yeah, I got the alarm ready. And she hears that and she's like, no, you ain't putting that for waking me up. So
yeah, that's the one I used. Like, I use a bunch of different tones for different kinds of alarms, but that's the one that's most likely to actually wake me up.
Well, that's why I said, I'm like telling her, but honey, that is Garrett. I mean, I'm sorry. If that thing doesn't wake you up, then I don't know what will. Anyway,
you know, the only other thing, and I don't know whether we want to spend any time on this, is you know, remembering the actual, you know, day. I mean, for me, you know, I was... yeah, I was getting ready to get ready for work, you know, my day at that time, usually I'd be into work around 10 o'clock-ish, and I lived like 10 minutes from work, so, you know, I was sort of, rolling in, I was still in bed, let's put it that way, but I had CNBC on, and that's where I saw the beginnings of this. I sort of remember vaguely hearing in my sleep, the CNBC guy, the one who's dead now, you know, mentioning that, you know, a plane had hit the towers and sort of waking up, paying attention, and then watching the rest sort of, and every few minutes I remember tossing off emails, to several people saying, oh my God, can you see what happened now? And, I remember calling you at one point, when one of the planes hit the tower, and trying to describe in real time, like, what kind of plane it was. And I was completely and totally wrong. I thought it was, like, one of these old-style, you know, tilted planes from the 40s or whatever. Because I had, like, a fraction of a second to see it, and they hadn't been replaying it yet. You know, because it was, like, right when it happened. And, you know, I remember ever since then, I'm like, you know, why didn't I rewind the TiVo? And then I realized, wait, I might not have had one. You know, but anyway... I don't know. It was a very strange day. It was a very, you know, emotionally powerful day. I personally, I mean, I lived in New Jersey. I, on a fairly regular basis, probably about once a month, was going to the World Trade Center or through the World Trade Center to get to the offices my employer had right next door. And so it was a place I went regularly. I mean, I wasn't there every day, but I was there on a fairly regular basis. And, so it was a very familiar place. It was very shocking. You know, I some of the buildings I did work in were heavily damaged, in the event. And then afterwards, the most striking memory I have of the whole thing was, I think, were two things. One, and both of these, I guess, are probably September 12th kind of things. But one was walking outside and having absolutely no planes in the sky.
Mm-hmm.
And two,
yeah, I know. And that was really weird. And especially because, you know, to me, I remember that morning when my office was right beside Miami International Airport. Okay. Believe me, I mean, the air traffic there is like a freaking like zoo, and, you know, having the airport completely shut down. Okay. It's just, that was bizarre.
Yeah. And the second thing for me was, had to have been either the night of September 11th or the night of September 12th, maybe even the night of September 11th. But I was driving back home from somewhere. I forget where I'd gone or why, just driving down the street, and it seemed like every single freaking house had candles out and flags out, and you just never see that kind of thing. And it mm-hmm. was absolutely striking. Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway. I know. It was a crazy day. It was just, you know, it was just bizarre, and I don't know. So.
Yeah.
Anyway,
shall we take a break?
Yep.
Let's take a break. We'll move on. We'll talk about other stuff after this.
Ready for the test, Dracula?
I'm ready, Frankenstein. Then let us begin.
Creepy Classic celebrates the classic horror and science fiction films from the silent era through the 1960s, and retro TV horror from the 1950s to the 1970s. Visit creepyclassics.com for all your classic video needs. And when you buy something, tell Ron that the curmudgeons say hello.
Okay, we're back. So, enough September 11th. We wanted to talk briefly about Yahoo, because they fired their CEO. You want to tell the story, Yvon?
Well, as far as I can tell, Carol Bartz goes, and who's CEO of Yahoo, she was the CEO before of Autodesk, if I remember correctly, goes and gets a call, and basically they tell her, you're fired by phone. She was on vacation.
Oh, and from what I've read as well, they read a script that the lawyers had written.
Yeah. And so she goes, and she's like, she gets this message, and she obviously still connected to the company, whatever. You know, usually most people, they get, most executives, they get terminated, and they're leaving to pursue other interests, blah, blah,
well,
blah.
Yeah, and most of them are like, we would like you to resign now, as opposed to you're fired.
Right. So she goes and, sends an email out to all the employees basically saying, well, I got fired, okay? it was just kind of like that. It just, you know, bluntly just said that she got fired. And, some people were talking about that, whether how interesting it was that, you know, what a breath of fresh air that somebody actually admitted instead of the usual bullcrap, that they actually did get fired. And, but the one thing is, the reason she got fired, I mean, she got hired a couple of years ago, because let's face it, Yahoo used to be in the search business. They were getting their lunch eaten, bottom line, by Google. They make this alliance with Microsoft in order to use the Microsoft search engines inside Yahoo, try to revive the business. the company has basically been floundering directionless. I mean, I don't know about you, but when was the last time that you used Yahoo?
I'll tell you, the last time I used Yahoo was the day before they switched their front page from a directory to a search.
So that was, Jesus, that's a long, long time ago.
I mean, because I remember, you know, pre-Google, Yahoo was one of the places to go. And their big advantage, of course, was that it wasn't just a search engine. It was a, you know, handcrafted directory
right.
of good sites that were worth going to, essentially.
And depending on the subject, right. If
right.
you were looking for this, if you would go there and you would find those... You would find those sites. You wanted this other thing, you would find the same thing, et cetera, and so forth.
Right. Of course, they weren't making any money that way. But, you know...
But nobody was at the time anyway.
No, nobody was. But then when they changed that, and all of a sudden it was a search engine, it was like, well, you just took away the main value of this page. Actually, you know, there was one other... I'm forgetting my history here. In addition to getting rid of the directory, the other thing that completely killed it for me... was when they tried to make it a portal. And instead of a search or a directory, there started to be, you know, put these widgets here where you put your news here and your weather here and your blah, blah, blah there. And I was like, I don't want that.
Well, I mean, it's kind of funny because that's what Google's doing right now with their homepage. But anyway...
I'll tell you, on Google, I haven't been to the damn Google homepage, except accidentally... In years, I used the little Google thing in my browser.
Yeah. So anyway, so the one thing about it is that if you go, look, they've been floundering for a number of years. No new strategy. Revenues are down like over the last 3 years. I mean, the company's still pretty profitable. Actually, profits have been going up, but revenues have been going down. And basically, a lot of the reason the profits are up is just simply because they've just been cutting costs. That's it. So basically, they've got no real, like, business model, let's face it, to where the hell they're going. And, let's face it right now. It's like I just mentioned. I mean, it's not a relevant player anymore.
Yeah, no one thinks about them.
No. It just isn't. And, I guess that's... You know why they got rid of her, and I would say, you know, you got 3 years to, I just went to the Yahoo homepage to see some of the stuff that they've got, right? So it looks like if I would go to CNN.com, for God's sakes, okay, that's what it looks like. And it's got this mail thing, Yahoo sites, mail, autos, dating, finance, there's Flickr. You do use Flickr.
I do use Flickr. You're okay. Right, and it's owned by Yahoo.
Yeah, games.
Now, I'll tell you, I don't have any particular loyalty to Flickr, though. I use it because it's convenient.
Right. I mean, they've got Yahoo Messenger, for God's sakes. I mean, who the fuck uses Yahoo Messenger?
You know, I signed into Yahoo Messenger for the first time, not for the first time, but the first time in years, like a month ago or so. And... Mm-hmm. You know, every few minutes, I get, like, some request to be on somebody's list and blah, 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 you know, random spammer people. And right. I'm like, okay, this is completely worthless to me. First of all, I think I know one person, maybe two.
That has Yahoo Messenger.
whoever were on Yahoo Messenger. And second, I turn the damn thing on and I just get bombarded by, like, fake spam messages. So, like, what's the point of this? And, you know, in terms of Instant Messenger in general, now everybody's just on Facebook. Nobody's on any of the others anymore. I mean, I have a handful of people I occasionally still see on AOL Instant Messenger.
I still see a few people on AOL.
And I know some people also use Gmail Messenger as well. But for the most part, like, when I have, like, you know, my client set up so it connects to multiple Instant Message services, and the one that has the most people consistently is always Facebook.
Yep, that's true. So there you have it. I mean, it's just turned into a completely irrelevant company. They fired the CEO basically because, let's face it, Yahoo's irrelevant. And, you know, she has really done nothing in order to make them any more relevant than they used to be. So there you have it.
So do they have a future? Or are they like HP?
Well, I don't know. Well, obviously they're making money still. So they've got, I mean, they are placing advertising. They're doing a few of the businesses, whatever. I mean, but let's face it, bottom line is that they don't have, like, I mean, what's the growth? What's the next step? I mean, what are you understanding that technology is going to, and what the hell are you going to be doing? Like, let me give you an example. A couple of years ago, I believe they bought Music Match, right? They bought the little Music Match radio, okay? And I remember that for a while. It's kind of funny that Music Match radio, I got to be honest with you, Pandora is just Music Match radio repackaged, okay? All right? That's all it is. I was just using it the other day, and I'm realizing this, I mean, what, did they fucking just steal the software and are just using it over here, Pandora? Because it's the same shit, okay? So they bought it, and then for some reason, in their omniscience, Yahoo, and I actually had a subscription to Music Match Radio, okay, all right? Because I used it at the office. It was like, you know what, if I wanted to have music in the office, it allowed me to pick stations. I could pick music on demand, and it was just kind of nice. Yahoo goes and sends me an email, we're terminating the service and you need to convert to the other one, Yahoo Music service. I tried to go through the process that says, here, use this link. It failed. Basically, bottom line is I just, even though I had a paying account, for God's sakes, I could not convert to whatever account at Yahoo. I could never get the software to work, and I just gave up. And I actually sent him a note. I said, you know, you guys are complete morons. You bought us a service that people are actually paying for and basically have forced me not to use it anymore and just to lose a paying subscriber because you're incompetent. I never got a reply back to that. And I said, well, you know, and that's the kind of typical shit that you saw Yahoo do over the last few years. They bought a whole bunch of little businesses and stuff and whatever. Like, we just talked to, like, Flickr and this and that and whatever. And then just basically just ran them into the ground and just did nothing with them. So, I don't see how they've got a future.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, you see the same kind of thing, like, the other one that was in the news this week, and we'll just touch on this and before moving on, but, you know, AOL was also in the news this week.
Oh, gosh. Yes, of course. Yeah, that's another clusterfuck.
So the clusterfuck in question this time was they bought TechCrunch, which is a tech news aggregation site that was run by a guy named Michael Arrington. And, you know, apparently he, you know, expected all kinds of things that weren't necessarily realistic. And, you know, basically he was going to run an investment fund that invested in the stuff that they reported on, which is generally, you know, a little sketchy, but whatever. He's always sort of said he's not a journalist and he's not bound by those rules. And basically, you know, this guy's known for being a dick anyway. But he pissed off AOL and they fired him, basically.
Okay.
And...
But that's another. Yeah, but you see, but what's the point of AOL buying TechCrunch? I mean, how does that fit into a strategy? I mean, that's the point.
Well, they've been buying a lot of these sort of blog content kinds of things, but, you know, then they, like with TechCrunch, I mean, it's one of these stuff where, you know, the site kind of was Arrington and his editorial stuff and. You know,
and
so,
if you can't keep them, then, you know, then whatever value you were trying to extricate, you just completely destroyed by that guy leaving.
Yeah.
It's like, what the, I mean, you know, it's like buying a consulting firm where the reason people went to the consulting firm is because it was run by, say, Samuel Minter. We want Samuel's advice. So the first thing you do in the first 6 months is make sure that Samuel Minter quits.
Yeah.
So what the fuck's the point of Samuel Minter Consulting if you got rid of fucking Samuel Minter? I mean, it's
well,
just...
and also from his point of view, I mean, what the hell was he thinking? He's sort of like, yeah, I'm going to let my company be bought by a big, huge Fortune 500 company, but I expect I'll still be able to do whatever the hell I want with it without anybody saying a damn thing.
I would usually take the money and run if I get offered a stupid amount of money.
I mean, that's the expectation, but he apparently expected to stay there and treat it as if he hadn't sold it.
Well, and that's another unrealistic thing, but that's a problem when people are going around, like, for example, if you're buying, you know, when you're buying something that the main feature is the person itself that's running it, then you've got to have a strategy around that. And obviously, all of these guys, like, hey, well, all these people, I don't understand what the fuck they're doing. They're going around spending money without any freaking rhyme or reason, and that's...
I mean, they also bought Huffington Post. I don't know how that's going.
I don't see that they're deriving a lot of value out of the purchase of Huffington Post, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
I mean, you don't go to Huffington Post and you think of, like, oh yeah, this is owned by AOL.
Mm-hmm.
It's might as well, you know, I've never bought it. So there is no synergy being generated. There's nothing.
Yep. Internet companies in the wilderness, I guess.
Yep, pretty much. Okay.
Okay, let's take another break. It's time for your poem of the week. Everybody enjoy your poem, and we'll be back and talk about jobs and politics. Back after this.
This is the Curmudgeon's Corner Poem of the Week, brought to you by Notel Motel.
10 Nights Dreams, after Natsumi Soseki, by Leanne Roripaw. 9. You're going to make me lonesome when you go. After Shihi's gone, the dresser and cupboard drawers yank themselves open in ransacked lack. Closet doors swing ajar, clothes slump from their hangers with a sigh. Buttons unravel from thread and are spat out, clattering to hardwood in a noisy scatter. You creep on the floor among them, eyes closed, trying to read their shifting braille with your fingertips. Hidden compartments come undone, popping out like jack-in-the-boxes around light fixtures and electrical sockets. The cats use them as cat doors, stepping in and out, you hear them swish their tails inside drywall. The apartment now a Japanese puzzle box like the kind you played with as a child. An entire bedroom wall slides away with a brittle warble of tambourine bells and you find a secret room. Inside, an inventory of lost things. Your American grandmother's glittery blue metal music box. Kokeshi dolls fishing on a geta stone. Unpaired earrings. Black and white photos with yellowed scalloped edges. An entire language you used to speak. Heavy flecked rice paper boxes that smell like green tea, wrapped in simple bands of linen ribbon, stacked floor to ceiling. They are carefully labeled. Things forgotten and not written down. Inviolabilities violated. Dreams really nightmares. Nightmares really dreams. Transitional love objects. Things given away too carelessly. Moments spent too long in hesitation. Moments of not enough hesitation. Awful things. Time you thought you had but didn't. Snake-skin selves. Unrealized beauty. On the floor, in the middle of the secret room, a violin case. Your violin, from before. Mounted insects unhinge from the wall, ricochet about the apartment. Blue morphos, shiny, awkward, flapping. Stick insect, a slow-motion twig, laboriously creeping away from the hearth. Peanut-headed lanternfly making demented rotations around the crenellations of the mantelpiece before becoming a tangled seed pod rattle in your hair. Kneeling, you unlatch the case, expecting familiar burnished deep red wood, expecting to stroke hourglass curves, ebony fingerboard, tracing your finger over the bridge along the graceful arabesques of F-holes. But when you open the lid, you discover your violin is gone, stolen. Someone has left a note inside the case's empty velvet. An anxious gust of wind, and outside, chimes jangle their deranged music, walls of the room suddenly transparent, now liquid, breathing a molten glass. Winged things buzz and swarm like the inside of a swirling snow globe. And when you lean in closer to read the handwriting on the note, is it his, her handwriting? It erupts into honey-colored flame. 10. Extinguish. you fly through a terrible yellow-green sky. Tornadoes parabola down from the glowering bellies of clouds. Lightning releases its electric guillotine. You're searching for something, but time is running out. You swoop and dip in and out of trailers in a desperate trailer court. Interiors abandoned in media res. Inside a trailer that smells of spilled beer and cat piss, you find what you've been searching for. Lit candle guttering on the countertop. You realize that you're supposed to blow out the candle. You must sing. The song so old it's been lost until this moment, this particular now. The breath from the song blowing out the candle. You've never sung the song before, but you know the melody, the words in a language you've never spoken, from somewhere deep within your very bones, as if encoded and spirographed into the double helixes of your DNA. You must blow out the candle. To blow out the candle is to be merciful. You're frightened. Why has this been left up to you? You hover above the candle and hesitate. This unharrowing, this unsorrowing. You sing the song. Your voice, a fierce ether. The flame quavers in the breath of your song. The world flickers, and...
For more like this, go to notelmotel.org with a new poet each week and a new poem every weekday.
And here we are.
Here we are.
So there was a big job speech. I don't think we talked about it, but the start of this was a whole thing where... You know, Obama was like, okay, I want to come to the Congress and give a speech on such and such day.
Right, right.
And then the Republicans were like, oh, we have a debate that day, so can you come a different day? And there was a big brouhaha about that, and then Obama said, sure, I'll come a different day. Yeah. So.
Well, but I think, you know what? Actually, I don't have a problem with doing that, to be honest with you. I will say that. I mean, I'm like, you know. I think maybe it blew up a little bit more because it seemed like, but I mean, what's the point of like, I mean, you're right. I mean, why would you have presidential like dueling with a debate? I guess, you know,
I think it was, you know, I don't know if somebody like just screwed up and didn't notice or whether they were actually trying to do this intentionally.
Right.
You know, either way, it's a dumbass move.
Right.
You know, by the White House to pick a date that it was stomping on top of a Republican debate.
Right.
I mean, come
right,
on. Right. You know, right. Having said that, apparently the White House asked about the date first. The Republican leadership was, okay, that sounds fine. And then,
right.
Well, and
that's
then
true.
Later,
because they did say it was fine. That's right. I forgot about that.
And then later they're like, oops, maybe it's not after all. You know?
Right, right.
So it was basically just a clusterfuck for a day as they tried to figure this out. But I guess then eventually they had the speech. I did not watch live. I did watch most of it later. I guess the bottom line of it is this is Obama trying to, you know, take a different approach. On all of these other things, the major legislative things, he's sort of given some general guidelines and then said, okay, Congress, you figure it out. This time he's coming in with a specific plan and telling people, pass it.
Yeah, pretty much. And so the jobs plan is basically, I didn't actually have time this week to go into the actual details of what what exactly we're going to do in order to get more jobs. Okay.
Basically it's spend a bunch of money and do some public work stuff.
Okay.
And extend unemployment and some other stuff like that.
Right. And I'm like, look, nobody out there is going out there and like really spending money just, you know, just because, okay, that's a reality. Any money that is spent like right now will have a positive impact on jobs. Okay. It doesn't matter, you know, you can debate whether it's a cost effective use of the money. You can say, well, you may get more productivity if you did it this way or whatever, or so forth. I mean, I got all these arguments. But the bottom line is that, you know, any additional money spent will translate into something. How significant will it be? I don't know. I'm a little bit of
Well,
I just don't know. I mean, like right now, here's a problem that we've got. Okay.
Well, let me ask this before.
Go ahead.
Yeah. Also, just can this thing even pass? I mean,
well,
yeah, or is this just a bunch of political maneuvering?
Well, there were some reasons why they were saying, you know, they were trying to make it palatable enough to pass.
Right. Well, as usual, I mean, and this is a thing that Obama always does. He tries to craft something that, at least theoretically, could have Republican support by including a bunch of things that previous generations of Republicans have called for, endorsed, whatever.
That's right.
But that doesn't mean this year's Republicans will.
No. And he did. He included stuff like, for example, like there were certain tax cuts. And there was also some way that down the road, in order to try to keep it somewhat revenue neutral, that eventually whatever we spent right now, we could make up the money later on in the deficit. So there were all of these things considered into the plan. But, you know, like what you just said, I mean, really, the Republicans are in, I don't know, they don't seem to be in a mood to do anything, to be honest with you.
Well, yeah, and look, we're in campaign mode right now. And, you know, this is all coming up to 2012 elections. And frankly, we've been in campaign mode since the beginning of the Obama administration. But, you know, and the Republicans have clearly, they've stated explicitly their ultimate goal is to not have Obama reelected. And all of their policy choices, all of their legislative choices are, that's the primary goal. And their primary tool in trying to achieve that goal is block everything.
Right.
You know, don't let anything happen. You know,
right.
Never cooperate. I mean, and they've said this pretty much explicitly. I mean, this isn't like a secret strategy. They've come right out and for the most part said this. You know, so I don't see why we would expect anything different this time. I mean, you need to peel off a significant chunk of Republicans in order to get anything done between their majority in the House and the, you know, the de facto 60 vote requirement in the Senate. You know, you need some of the more centrist Republicans on board for absolutely anything you do. But guess what? There are not that many of those left.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's the problem. I mean, it's just, yeah, I mean, if you had a block of, like, Republicans that could get on board, I mean, this package, I would say, if you did this, like, 5 years ago, you probably could have gotten this thing passed easily. But I don't know if we can right now. That's the thing. I mean, I don't know. And
And one of the things to add here is two things, I guess. One, the central sort of Republican philosophy these days is, for the most part, you know, government is not the solution in these kinds of problems.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the thing you need to do is reduce government even more.
Right.
Get regulations out of there, reduce government spending, blah, blah, blah.
Mm-hmm.
This is increasing government spending.
Yeah.
Guess what? Fundamental disconnect.
Yeah, I know.
Also, you know, if you look at the polls, the general public is also thinking government shouldn't be, we don't want another stimulus. We don't want another bailout. It's a waste of money, blah, 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 blah. And, you know, I've certainly seen differing, you know, economists saying different things about that. I mean, there are lots of economists who say exactly the thing that you do need is actually a bunch of government spending right now. That's how you solve this problem. And if you don't do that, you're screwed. And, you know, but, you know, to a large degree, this isn't sort of an empirical question about, you know, let's look at the numbers and see what would or wouldn't work. It's more a philosophical question, you know,
mm-hmm.
where the Republicans really are sort of in a position, I don't care if it would stimulate the economy or not. It's not what we should do.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and of course, they fundamentally don't believe it really would, or at least that's what they say. And I don't know. I mean, I'm not, you know me. I'm not a big, like, government do everything person either. I don't like the constant increase in the scope of the federal government. You know, however, you know, can I look realistically and say, well, that would probably actually be a stimulative effect on the economy and might actually help in the recession? Well, not whatever it is, whether we're double dipping or just a slow recovery. Yeah, probably. But
yeah, I mean, I think that's that's the key issue. I mean, you know, look, I don't think, you know, just standing by right now isn't really helping. I know that the Fed is thinking about a couple of other things to do, but here's the main problem that we've got. Fed moves have not translated into cheaper borrowing for most individuals. Okay. You know, there is a Obama, it was speculated that he may have announced something to do with mortgages. To try to translate a lot of the interest rate reductions that have happened, the fact that interest rates are low, to make sure that a lot of people were able to actually get those. Because the banks, what they're doing right now is just padding their profits by just not passing along these savings, okay?
Right.
And he didn't, okay? So that didn't happen. And that probably would have had far more stimulative effect with less cost to anybody than anything, okay? So that didn't happen. On the other end, for example, you see like banks getting being able to get funding at super cheap rates by the federal government. But one of the things that I was just noticing the other day, I was doing a little bit of research just to look at some stuff on terms of credit card interest rates. Credit card interest rates right now are higher than they've ever been, that I recall, over the last like
right
15, 20 years. And this is at the same time that we're having really low interest rates, like in general. So that means that people's outlets for you know, well, let's stimulate the economy so people go out and borrow, right? Well, how the fuck they borrow? The interest rates, even though they are being able to get, like, you know, on the market, like super cheap funds, that's not translating to what consumers are paying. So it's not really helping the average person. The average person is paying higher interest rates right now than they've been in the last 20 years. So I don't know, something, you know, this disconnect somewhere has to be fixed, somewhere. And I just don't know if any of the things that the president or the Treasury have proposed or the Federal Reserve is getting us there.
Well, and I've heard, you know, one opinion basically being, hey, look, you know, everything, especially the consumers got way over leveraged. In, you know, the decade before all this started. And, you know, we're basically not going to be, quote unquote, back to normal until everybody deleverages and you know, pays down all the stuff that they built up over, you know, the last, you know, over the 2000s.
That's right.
You know, and how long will that take? Well, it's slowly, slowly going down. I mean, I know, you know, my personal situation, we've been doing nothing but, you know, we haven't put new debt on credit cards, you know, that stayed longer than a month, other than some really trivial things, in years. Mm. You know, we've been, you know, paying off the credit cards that, you know, frankly, I racked up, you know, I'm still paying off the shit I racked up in college, for God's sake, most likely. you know, and certainly, like, yeah, there were other stuff that was, you know, I was doing in the 90s and blah blah blah, and it's like, oh, let's charge it, you know, and then, you know, we're paying it off and saying,
yeah.
Now, in the meantime, the credit card companies are like, you're right, the interest rates are still sky high, but like, it seems like every other month, you know, they're like, here, have a higher credit limit. Have a higher credit limit. Please, please spend some money.
Yeah, yeah, but please, please spend some money at an average interest rate of 15%, for God's sakes, when they're borrowing it at 2. I'm like, come on, what the fuck? I mean, really? You don't want to make 13 points, and then they don't understand why people don't want to borrow a dime?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know. So, anyway.
Yeah.
All right. So, okay. So,
okay. Let's take another break and we'll come back and we'll talk about your exciting time in the middle of European protests.
Oh, that's right.
And I'll cough some more. We'll be back right after this.
You're in the Valley, AM 1620 and LigonierRadio.com. This is where you'll find your favorite songs. Classic music for a classic American town, AM 1620, and in stereo at LigonierRadio.com, The Valley.
And here we are. So, Yvonne, you have a story.
Well, okay, so, you know, there's been quite a, I mean, everybody's heard in the news about all these protests in Europe, okay, you know, regarding the economy, jobs, you know. Well, Spain has an official unemployment rate that is over 20%. Now, I've always said that the official unemployment rate
to remind people, you were in Spain for a wedding, and then you took some extra vacation on either side or something.
Yes. So the official unemployment rate in Spain, as far back as I can remember 20 years ago, has always been like, when it's been, economy has been like, even the economy being okay was over 20%. I mean, to me, it seems like, I would say like about at least a third of it is people working under the table but still claiming the very generous unemployment benefits that Spain has. Okay. So, but still anyway, what that means, if it's over 20%, that means that unemployment's still pretty bad. Okay. All right. So you know, think about 12%. Okay. So it's bad. The unemployment is bad. No doubt about it. Jobs are hard to come by. But here's the one thing. Spain has such incredible like job protections. Okay. Look, you could get, like, here's the one thing about their unemployment benefits. Say you're not on unemployment right now. You could take a job, work 3 days, quit, and be eligible for unemployment benefits. Okay?
Right.
So people were protesting the fact that the government wanted to make it, well, you know what? That's you could quit and like collect them. You didn't have to like be fired, okay?
Right.
So they were like saying, you know what? No. You had to be at least in a job 6 months in order to be able to collect unemployment benefits, okay? All right? And a couple of modifications like that. Well, you know, everybody was like up in arms. How the fuck could you make us work 6 months, for God's sakes? I'm hearing the protests, and I'm like, look, I think, you know, it's like we're so used to having almost no protections of that kind over here whatsoever that I'm listening to this stuff, and I'm like, are you shitting me? I'm like, oh, wow, gee whiz, heaven forbid that you actually have to work 6 months before you collect unemployment for like 3 years. I mean, come on, you know. So as we're at our hotel, we notice that there have been some police barricades setting up since earlier today. Then we get to the hotel like at 6 o'clock on one day, and holy fuck, if there isn't a fucking protest lined up. I mean, but we couldn't even walk to our hotel. We had to go around another route. Well, we actually walked in through the protest or whatever. And my wife and I remarks, this is hilarious. All these people, they're all complaining that they don't have a home to live in, that they're homeless, they're streetwise, blah, 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 blah. So I'm looking at all these fucking people dressed in like, didn't look like cheap clothes, okay? Holding Starbucks cups, okay? All right? With freshly made like 5 euro fucking drinks, because a freaking like frappuccino over there is like $8, for God's sakes. I'm seeing these people, wait a second. You're unemployed and holding up communist signs and you're fucking walking around with a goddamn 5 euro goddamn freaking like Starbucks freaking frappuccino? Are you fucking kidding me? So that was just, I think that a lot of what I saw, it was just weird. Me and my wife were trying to understand what they were protesting, and we couldn't really understand. You read all these signs. There were some people walking around with like some placards, you know, with like Soviet Union, like hammer and sickles, with some words, and we're trying to make them read them. We're like, what do they want? They want the return of the Soviet Union? I mean, we're like, I'm like, is that the protest? Then some other people had some other signs, and I'm reading all the signs, and they were like all like incoherent. I mean, it was just like, I'm like reading it, and I'm hearing the speech a little bit, and we're all like, can anybody make sense of what the fuck they want? Because I can't. Okay, all right, and apparently not anybody else. So it just seemed like weird. The protest. Most of the people were very young. Most of the people seem to be like I guess angry about the lack of job opportunity or something or whatever. But yet at the same time, it was like a convoluted mass of gobbledygook. I couldn't make heads or tails. Okay, yes, we're out here, we're protesting, but against what? And what do you want? I couldn't make any sense of it. And maybe it's just typical of a protest, I guess. I guess, you know, you're, most people to protest, that's just, you know, you can't really make out what the hell they want. But I just thought that the whole clash of, like, I heard some of them talking about how they're all living in tents and unemployed, but yet, you know, drinking 5-euro drinks at the same time, and I'm like...
But Yvonne, now, the critical question. Did you pick up a sign and protest too?
No, we didn't. We thought about it, though. You know, we're like, well, what the hell? Let's get into the protest. I mean, what the fuck anyway? We don't know what the hell's going on, so might as well. But no, we did not. We had to walk around. It seems
in general, a lot of these that have been going on in various places in Europe off and on for the last few years are basically just, you know, we want to keep all our benefits. I mean, that's the bottom line, right?
I think that's definitely one. That any, it seems like any small cut... Okay,
and I can fully understand that. By the way, you know, if I've gotten used to having some benefit provided by the government, and now all of a sudden they're saying, "Well, that's not going to happen anymore," I can understand being upset by that. Even if I intellectually understand, you know, hey, we can't afford this shit anymore, or whatever, I can understand being upset if the actual reality of any change is that they are taking stuff away from me. I understand being upset by that.
I guess the one thing is that the benefits weren't, it didn't seem like, I didn't see any benefits that were being totally eliminated. They were just being somewhat less generous. Okay. All right. That's what I could tell from what I was reading. So, you know, it's like, I mean, I was with a cab driver, and there were, the guy was explaining to us that, and they're saying that Spain is the least generous in this, you know, Europe has a very low, birth rate. Okay. Mm-hmm. So their population, you know, they're having some demographic issues with that. So they're encouraging people to have children. Look, if you have a child, apparently you get a monthly, like, extra 1,000 euro payment to you by the government a month in Spain in order to help you with the child. Actually, the payments, they give you a payment for schooling. They give you a payment for health. The bottom line is it turned out for one child, you get 2,000 euros a month. I mean, 24,000, I mean, almost $30,000 a year. From the frickin' government to have a child. Fuck, I'd be pumping out babies like there's no tomorrow. I'd fucking get that kind of money, for God's sakes.
I'm not sure you're biologically capable of pumping out a baby.
Well, I don't know. I'd be helping my wife take care of that piece.
There you go.
But anyway, but that's the thing. I mean, almost like the fucking money that they gave you almost makes up for whatever the hell you would lose and them not working. I guess that's what we're trying to do. I mean... And I'm like, he was telling me that they were cutting back on some of those. But they weren't eliminating it, but they were giving you a reduced amount. Okay? And I'm like, okay. I'm like, really? I mean, you know, you've got, like, debt that's going through the roof. You've got unemployment at 20%. You've got, you know, an economy that's sluggish. And I don't know. People are just – I don't know. I think – I guess that, you know, like you said, when you are so comfortable with so many benefits, I guess – that, you know, somebody just tries to take away even just a little bit, you know, people are not going to react kindly to it. So,
well, yeah, I mean, it doesn't have to be much. I mean, it doesn't matter what it is. If you take something I've got and you take it away, I'm going to be pissed.
Right.
Just like if I have something, and that goes, and it goes the same for reducing benefits as it does for increasing taxes. Either way, there's something I've got and you're trying to take it away and I'm going to be pissed. And you know, it takes a bit to sort of say, okay, let's look at the entire back and forth of the situation and the whole society and what's the right thing to do for the long term, blah, 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 blah. And I don't even know the right answers to those questions. I don't know enough about the European situation, but it's an entirely different way of looking at things. On the ground, I'm going to know one thing. I have something today and you're taking it away tomorrow.
Right. Yeah, and I think that's the bottom line. So anyway, I just thought it was just kind of interesting. All of a sudden, I got wound up, you know, you know, basically in the middle of one of these, like, I mean, literally in the middle, you know. I was surrounded by all these guys in placards, and I'm like, you know, I guess I wasn't expecting that. I mean, we're right in the middle of town. I mean, this is like, I mean, right in the heart of the city, which I guess it's, you know, where else would you really want to have one of these, I guess, if I'm honest. So.
Yeah. Now, we're you should have it out in the middle of the country where no one can see you.
Right.
No one can get there.
Right.
Hey, one of those free speech zones. Anyway, I think we're about out of time. I just wanted to mention one other thing that we had thought about talking about today, but I guess we never got to it, which is, you know, an update on the Republicans and what they're doing. We were going to do it in context of the job stuff. But bottom line here, you know, a lot of people are saying this thing is boiling down to Perry versus Romney. I don't know if it's a little too early to say that yet, but it looks like, you know, Perry's still hot. Yeah, those are number one and number two in the polls, and everybody else seems to be fading. So we'll see. We still got a ways to go, though. Anything to add to that, Yvonne? Otherwise, we'll talk about it next time.
No, I think that is what it's boiling down to. However, I think that what it's also boiling, you know, what's happening is that, I mean, it's boiling down to both of them, but I think it's like people still are a little, you know, they're a little bit unsure because both of them have some pretty big liabilities. I mean, you know,
neither one of those is like, you know, a dream candidate.
No, it's and not a dream candidate for like the Tea Party years, not a dream candidate for anybody. I mean,
but I think that's part of the issue. I mean, you know, Perry does appeal quite a lot to a lot of the right-wing Tea Party side of things, and you know, Romney's sort of the safe central establishment guy, but on the other hand, that's exactly why, you know, the Tea Partyists are going to hate him, and there have been contradictory reports, but certainly some people have said that the fact that he's a Mormon is going to hurt him with a large portion of the Republican base as well.
And I happen to agree with that. I think that it's going to be hard for people to a big portion of Republican base to just ignore that.
Anyway, we'll see how it continues to shake out. I have the last debate on my TiVo, but I haven't actually watched it yet. So
okay.
Anyway, right. That's it. Thank you for joining us for this week's Curmudgeon's Corner. As usual, email me at abelsmay@abelsmay.com with any questions, thoughts, comments, etc., etc., etc. And tell your friends to listen and tune in next week. Goodbye.
Bye-bye.